throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kauf with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Paul Jones Drug Tuesday out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM. The Sports Animal, glad to have you along for the next hour as we get into all kinds of different stuff. You know, spring football is going on, Jared. Inside the state of Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, both underway with their spring practices. Are OU and OSU being underappreciated or undervalued in Vegas? From a win totals perspective, these are some of the lowest. It's the lowest total Oklahoma has had in, I couldn't even tell you how long. John Blake, maybe Bob's first year, maybe Bob's second year before they really got it rolling. And Oklahoma State, with all the guys that they have returning and the experience, seems to me like there's a chance that both of those teams are being really underappreciated and undervalued out in Vegas. So we can talk about that. Also, do we really even know yet? Until after spring ball and until after the last portal opens back up on April 15th. It's crazy to think, okay, we went through the bowl season, we went through the portal season, we went through recruiting. All right, where's everybody at? And then you think, well, maybe here, but what's going to happen in 2 weeks? Where are people going to go if they see? But does it really matter? I mean, is that the point where you start seeing guys that aren't going to play anyhow jump in the portal and try to find a place to go at a lower spot? Or will there be some wild moves coming out of the April 15th portal? We can talk about that. The men's tournament, crazy, crazy stat as far as experience goes in this Final Four. One of them ain't like the other. And do we appreciate that one enough for what they've been doing? That one obviously is UConn. Do we appreciate what UConn basketball has accomplished? You know, and I think they remind me of a football program, except for they've gotten almost to a little bit of a longer sustained excellence than even the football program I'm thinking of was able to accomplish. Is the quality of the play worth watching all these games? I know both of us have watched a ton of this tournament. Is the quality of play better than what we thought it was throughout most of the year? Does it annoy you watching Purdue? It probably doesn't annoy you since you picked them in your bracket, but I think a lot of the country gets annoyed now that they're watching Zach Edey and the way he's officiated. You know, yesterday he had double the amount of free throws for himself than Tennessee had as a whole. But there could be a reason. He might be the reason why that is, right? And then which game are you looking forward to the most? And then, of course, all the rage tonight, or today was tonight, was last night. Did you watch the women's games? If you did, would you continue watching if LSU would have won? And then finally, why can't we just set, why today will there be conversations that are just absolutely moronic about Caitlin Clark and her ability to play in the NBA? Not the WNBA. There will be conversations all across this country about why she would be able to play in the NBA. Why can't we just talk about how great Caitlin Clark is as a woman's basketball player? Why can't we just compare her to Cheryl Miller and Maya Moore and Sue Bird and Cheryl Swoops? Why can't we just do that? Because in a lot of ways, I think it diminishes her accomplishments if you try to throw her in with the men. And I think that's a disservice. The people that are championing Caitlin Clark the most are also doing her the biggest disservice by wanting to compare her to a different level of athlete. So we can talk about that as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. It is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. If you've got something else on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. You can log on to KADSAM.com. You can download the app. The app's got it all. It's got radio. It's got the Penny News. Brand new edition of the Penny News will hit the website tonight at midnight, thepennynews.com. You can check out the deals. This week's Penny News there just as soon as the clock strikes midnight. Then, of course, the print edition of the Penny News start filtering out tomorrow in a lot of locations everywhere by Thursday morning. Big Elk and Paragon TV are also in that app, which, by the way, did I mention free to download? I don't think I did. It's a free app. But Big Elk and Paragon TV, when you got games on, that is your spot for high school sports. And the Skinny on Sports podcast, we podcast the show every day. And you can find it everywhere. If you go searching for a podcast, a different one, you can find ours there too. It's everywhere. How are you today, Jared?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I don't appreciate the weather.
Yeah, that was a sudden change.
Boy, it was nice yesterday, and then all of a sudden it looked like it. Did you get any hail at Canute?
I don't know. I was here. I was,
oh yeah, you had to do the weather.
I was doing some weather here.
It looked like
got a lot of rain though. Lost some power.
For
a big period of time.
I think Wyatt was playing some sort of maybe Fortnite with Joey.
And she lost power.
And all of a sudden, he's like, Joey,
hello.
Where'd you go? We don't have power.
Help.
I have no idea here.
Need some help here.
And so, yeah.
I need revived here. Help me out.
I did know that that Canute did lose a little power. We had a bunch. It was small hail, but it came down in a hurry.
Yeah. Lost here. I didn't hear it here in studio.
Oh, there was a point there where I was afraid. That's not the same thing I've seen yet, or I haven't been at the house when this has happened. With the pool cover on, started kind of sagging down because of the weight. And I thought, uh-oh. I think it would take a lot more than what we had, but it was still, there was a bunch of hail really quickly and rain, and then it all moved off and it was gorgeous. Isn't it weird how a lot of times when those big time storms blow through, and once they get through, how gorgeous it is after they leave?
And then your Facebook feed is flooded with rainbow pics. That is nice. And that nice smell of rain afterwards. Spring rain. I'm glad it wasn't as bad as some may have said it was going to be. It wasn't or here anyways. But happy for the rain. But yeah, now it's cold.
Yeah, now it's freezing
cold. Oh, well, what are you going to do?
Just wait a few days?
Yeah, exactly. We'll be back in the 70s by the end of the week, going into the weekend. But then it'll be windy.
A little bit of pea-sized hail for about 5 minutes, what we're reporting. Over in Canute.
A little pea size.
That's about what it was here.
It was gone by the time I got home. It was still sunny when I left here and got home, and there's massive puddles everywhere, but hail was gone.
Looked like somebody had just threw a whole giant jar of marbles out. Little white marbles is what it looked like at our house. But once you got home, did you watch the women's basketball?
I did, and I know what some are saying. Wait a minute, you got home, you had no power. Why did the generator go? So, yes, I was able, and I did. My girls had it on. They were, and I was surprised because I walked in about halftime of that LSU game and Iowa game, and I was, that was all the talk yesterday of the rematch between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and the girls were watching it, and it was tied at half, and second half, it was entertaining. I was watching that mainly, and then at commercial, I'd switch it to a baseball game and then go back to it, and it looked like Iowa had it. I watched it to the very end there. I was tuned in.
That's almost exactly what I did. I watched the second half, and I did the same thing. Flipped it to some baseball when it was at the commercial break.
You know me. I'm a girl dad, and I was actually impressed that my girls knew to watch it. They're 10 and 7. Now, I'm sure mom had something to do with that. But when I came home, usually I'm thinking, they like this show called Dr. Pole. It's about a veterinarian up in, Montana or something. Or diners, or stuff like that. I walk in, and that game was on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell them to do that. So I was kind of a proud dad moment, good girls. And they're watching it. They weren't running around. They were actually sitting there watching it and and they're paying attention to it. But that's a big part of it in my house, you know, with women's sports. It is with my girls. So I was impressed that they had it on. And then, you know, and I had the intention of keeping track of it, right, and doing what I just said, kind of going back and forth. In fact, you know how you do it when you watch, like, especially sports, and there's two games on. You pick one main game, then commercial, you go check the score of the other game. Then you go back to that main game. My intention was the baseball game was going to be the main game. And then I'll just go, you know, between innings, I'd go check the score. It was the other way around. And I had no problem with that because that's what my girls wanted to watch.
I just got this text, and I think there's a lot of people, and I might have even been guilty or be in this boat as well. And I shouldn't say planned, but so Caitlin Clark's the only female athlete I have ever planned on watching. And I'm an avid sports fan, and this guy is an avid sports fan.
She is appointment watch if you can. I found myself a couple of Sunday afternoons this winter. Now, granted, there was really nothing else on, even during football season, the football games. Maybe it was in the, I don't know when it was, but there was really no football on. Might have been right after the football season in February, where I found myself watching her. And it was on ABC on a Sunday afternoon. Yeah, but if it was, say, Ohio State versus, I'm just throwing a random team, Nebraska.
Anybody but Caitlin Clark.
I'm not watching it, cause, but I was like, oh, Iowa? Oh, I want to see this number 22 player and watch her do what she does.
She's the only one that can make people do it. Angel Reese isn't making anybody do it. Juju Watkins isn't making anybody do it. Paige Beckers isn't making anybody do it. Caitlin Clark has, so there's something about maybe her personality. You like it, you don't like it. She whines, you know. It, you know what I'm saying? There's like her personality on the floor leads people to watch for both sides of it, to like or not like her. That game last night was Bill. I mean, we've been waiting a year for that one, right? We knew it was coming, and then there it came. But she does things on the floor that remind you of watching men. And I think that's why those comparisons start to come. You know, some of the passes she makes, obviously the range that she shoots the ball with. I was seeing people, you know, I can't believe she takes those shots with nobody underneath the basket. You know who else they said that about 8 years ago? Oh, those are horrible shots in transition, taking threes. There's nobody there to rebound. Steph Curry. I don't hear anybody saying that anymore.
Yeah, he kind of changed the opinion of that. Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be a 35-footer with somebody in your face was a horrible shot. He makes them over and over and over, and all of a sudden it's not such a bad shot. And she's that way as well. She is she's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. Her skills are different than anybody else's, than basically you've ever seen. And I know people are like, oh, Paige Beckers was good. Okay, whatever. This woman has broken every single record there is. Every one of them. I mean, there's no scoring or shooting record left for her to be able to conquer because it's already hers. Tournament, non-tournament, career, season. I mean, it almost doesn't even matter. She's got them all. And, you know, I think there was kind of a, depending on what side you were, last night, the cool thing about last night to me was there was like an empire versus the force in that game. Depending on who you rooted for, was who was the empire and who was the force, right? Or the Rebel Alliance. You know, if you found yourself more on the LSU side, she is Darth Vader. If you found yourself more on the Iowa side, Kim Mulkey's probably Darth Vader more than Angel Reese, right? But that was the cool thing about that game is that in the media has stoked the flames of a bunch of different things, rightly or wrongly. And in a lot of ways, some of the stuff that's happened over the past week leading up into this game with some of the media stories that have been out there, they somehow figured out a way to make LSU and Kim Mulkey almost a little bit of the victim. Like, you almost felt a little bit sorry for him about some of the things that were written about him, that there's absolutely no chance that that guy can know is true or not. It's just the outside perception of what they are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and we keep on waiting for this Washington Post story about Kim Mulkey, and it's never come.
I think it's out.
What is it?
I don't.
It obviously wasn't behind, a bombshell.
It's behind a paywall, and I tried to get snippets of it. You know, the Cliff Notes of it. I haven't found it.
So the truth is, it's not near what it was built to be.
The LA Times, I think, really was more kind of what you're talking about.
Yes, the LA Times is just kind of a guy almost saying what it looks like
are. And I heard this. I didn't know it. I didn't even know about that article until I was hearing people talk about it on talk radio. And the guy who wrote it is a UCLA beat writer. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. It's like if you go to Sooner Scoop, you got to understand what you're reading is from a very biased standpoint. And that came from this guy from the LA Times. Even though he writes for the LA Times, he is a beat writer for UCLA. And so he was really, really beating down LSU, but to the point, there were lines crossed. I think it was. I get the point he was trying to make, but some of the verbiage he was using was like, really, do we need to go that far? So, but Mulkey, man, I mean, I think another part of it is, I think when people see how worked up she can get based on what you're writing or saying, and they're like, well, let's keep doing it because that's getting clicks. Okay. And that's getting her reaction. You know, what if we told our kids, you know, on the playground, just ignore them, just walk away from it. And Mulkey is not that, but I get what she's doing too. She's defending her team and she's being the leader and the head coach and everything. But it's just a matter of circumstance, how that all comes down and how that plays out for our, viewing the entertainment almost.
So here's my question. Mulkey is, it's obvious that people don't like her.
Yeah.
If it was the same, and I believe there is somebody that's just exactly like her. The only difference is she's a man and coaches, or he's a man and coaches men. What is the difference between Greg Popovich and Kim Mulkey?
Oh, yeah, not a lot.
Almost nothing. And yet, because we have this standard of idea of what a woman is supposed to act like or be, I mean, we see it with the players, too. You know, Caitlin Clark yells the F word out loud and just not necessarily at anybody, just yells it. And we have 3 days of social dissertations about how women aren't supposed to act like that. They're supposed to be more prim and proper. And oh, by the way, we get those articles written by the same people that think men should be able to play with women. So shut the hell up. Nobody wants to hear it from you, right? Mm-hmm. It's okay for a woman to get out there and be athletic, be competitive, kind of be a pain in the butt. And that's definitely what Mulkey is. But I think there is such a double standard, and as women's sports begin to kind of move to the forefront or a little bit closer to the forefront of things, it becomes more and more apparent. You know, how many articles were written last year in June about Oklahoma and the way that they got fired up on the softball field? If that was a baseball team, it would be lauded. Instead, because it was women, it was kind of beat down. Mulkey is a perfect example of that. I don't know that she's a whole bunch different than any of the great coaches that have ever coached, but she's a woman and maybe a little bit more brash than what we think women ought to be, and therefore she takes a bunch of abuse from fans, from media, from people everywhere, where when that man is doing that, he's celebrated as the best ever. I mean, what Nick Saban and Kim Mulkey, what's the big difference? Kind of grumpy, kind of loud, really good at what they do.
Very demanding.
Very demanding. And this question is always asked to both of them. How does she get people to play for her? How does Saban get these guys to play for him like that? Well, they have some kind of secret sauce that they're able to do it.
Well, the big reason is the win-loss column.
Well, yeah.
You want to go play for a winner.
But that's accepted. That's acceptable for the men, not for the women. You know, I mean, it's just a weird, it's a weird, weird thing. And, you know, Geno probably gets away with some of the stuff he says because, one, he's obviously the greatest women's basketball coach ever. And two, he's a man. So it's okay for him to, you know, kind of question different things. Where it doesn't seem like it is for her. And listen, I can't stand why I can't stand her. But that doesn't mean that she's doing.
No, I can't either. But it's rooted in back in
feeling like she was cheating at Baylor
or her Baylor days and the battles with OU when Sherry had her best team going up against their best team and the way her antics on the court is why the way she just felt so entitled for every whistle or non-whistle or whatever, the way she just carried herself, it drives me crazy. It drives me nuts.
I thought she was really subdued last night.
I thought a little bit, yeah.
The only time she really felt like she got riled up was when Reese got called for that final foul and a charge. But I think that was also kind of the last gasp effort, and she knew at that point it was over.
Yeah, you're right. And then I think it's over. But it was funny because every time there was a whistle against LSU, what'd I do? If it was on a certain side of court, I'd look right for the girl in green, you know, like, what's she doing? You know, and just looking for her outburst.
Yeah, there really wasn't.
No.
And kudos to both sides. You know, this was built up as it was going to be a nasty game with, you know, kind of extracurricular things going on the floor. It wasn't whatsoever. It was a basketball game.
They kind of put that to bed early. Someone asked, I think it was Reese. She's like, we don't hate each other. You know,
right.
They kind of, you know, we're done with this. They moved on from it.
But you also, I mean, you can say that all you want to, but when you get out in the heat of the moment, you never know what's going to happen.
Sport. That's the game. And what did you, as soon as the game was over, and my wife and girls, oh, it's over, okay. And they went, and Alex's like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm waiting for the handshake line.
A little bit.
I'm kind of wanting to see what's going on here.
A little bit.
Yeah. Nothing happened.
So
Mulkey, to her credit, said some classy things after in the post game about Clark and everything.
Clark was too, you know, on the court with Holly Rowe.
Yeah.
About how good, you know, it was, and maybe this is why more people, especially after last year's game, gravitated toward the Caitlin Clark Iowa side, is because the story, as soon as the buzzer hit zeros last year, was the antics of Angel Reese kind of following Caitlin around the floor at the end, taunting her, essentially.
Right.
And you saw none of that back the other way. And I think that's maybe the culture within the programs, and that maybe that's, you know, if you want to not be happy with Kim Mulkey about something like that, feel free. I just think she takes a lot of unwarranted abuse because people don't like to see women be that assertive and be that aggressive. And be that forceful.
Well, I think ultimately, and I mentioned her Baylor days, but the ultimate thing, and I mentioned this to my wife last night, we're having kind of the same discussion about why Mulkey gets under my skin. It's the culture thing. And I always go, like, if there is a perception of a bad culture, I mean, I go back to the fight with South Carolina. I've said this before. It starts with me, with the head coach. That's the culture you've laid out, head coach. So that's like you got to control your team. You got to set a standard, a better culture. That's where, you know, I think LSU maybe unfairly kind of gets that bad rep of a bad culture. But is what it is. It's because, you know, I go to Mulkey, I'm like, you're the one in charge there. They listen to you. You're the one who sets that standard and that culture. But I also get there's a fine line between having that edge, you know, and trying to maintain that edge in the competitive spirit of any sport, and you want to have that edge, but sometimes that line is blurred, and it looks bad. But I do want to say thank you to Angel Reese, though, for the past, what now, year, because she has set the example for my kids that I can go, don't act like that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't do this stuff. Don't wear long eyelashes on the court. I refuse to allow you to do that. Thank you, Angel Reese. I appreciate it. Now, and Sam's blowing up the text line about, exactly, Sam, I would want, no, exactly. Would you want your kids to act that way from the text line? That's just what I said.
See, I guess I have a,
I mean, the whole point at your finger thing, like we just talked about a year ago. That's what I'm saying is I actually took my kids and I said, that's not how we act.
No, but at the same time, it's not the end all be all to prove that they don't have a great culture. Are they brash and cocky? Yeah. It's why people loved Miami or hated Miami.
Or
Oklahoma.
Or the bad boys of Detroit.
I mean, you can go all the way down through here. Barry Switzer. His teams were as brash and cocky as it got. But when it's your team, it's okay. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's totally okay. When it's the boss, it's a bunch of crap. When it's somebody, you know, and that's just sports fandom in general. And listen, I also think there's way too much gets kind of painted with a broad brush of how an athlete acts in between the lines in that competitive environment versus what they are as a person. Those things, we don't have any idea day to day. Angel Reese might be Mother Teresa off the floor. You know what I'm saying? We don't know. We literally don't know. But she's never going to get that benefit of the doubt because of what she did on it. And that's part of playing those sports, and that's part of, you know, doing what you do. But at the same time, I think we ought to have a little bit better sense or an ability to separate those things. Because for normal people like me, I can't get into the heads and the psychology of what it takes to play at that level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes not becoming a different person, but mentally going to a totally different place than you do in everyday life. And does it excuse it? No. But I also don't think that just because, you know, somebody does something crazy or is, you know, confident on the field of play should necessarily mean that we confuse that with how they are off the floor. That's just me.
So final thought on that is when it's your own team or player you root for doing something like so.
I mean, there's a perfect example right here in this state. His name is Baker Mayfield.
You know where I'm going. Yes. At Kansas. Yes. We know what we're talking about here, the whole grabbing incident. I remember when that happened. I remember, and then they said, this is what happened moments ago, and they showed it, and I go, oh, no.
They wouldn't shake his hand, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, I know. Well, geez, you can't rattle the cage on that guy because he'll come at you. You know, it's like, well,
I mean, would you rather have somebody point at a ring finger or grab their, you know, stuff?
I don't know. But, yeah, it's – and there's been, like, examples like that throughout sports.
Oh, yeah.
With everybody's team.
Oh, absolutely. Because here
what about Lynch jumping in the end zone backwards?
Well, for the most part, the people that you can't stand on somebody else's team, you would love to be on yours.
Your team, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just the truth.
Yeah,
the way that people play. Would you continue to watch if LSU had won? Is this a Caitlin Clark phenomenon, or do you think this is a?
Well, I mean, it's like the same reason, in a way, like OU keeps winning in softball. And a lot of people tune in to watch because they either, A, want to watch them win or lose. So I think I would probably tune in just, you know, like, okay, I'm going to root for NC State or you, whoever they would have matched up with. Yeah, I mean, and then for the purpose of you know, my kids to see women's basketball on television on a big stage. But, because I'd be rooting against them is what I'm saying.
Against LSU.
Yeah.
See, I think it's way more her than women's basketball. Unfortunately. Now, can this help? Maybe. But I think the draw is the phenomenon that she is. more than
Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark. I think Caitlin Clark is why people are watching. And like, as much as there are people that want to root against LSU for multiple reasons, I don't know if their fire burns bright enough to then tune in on Friday and root against LSU playing Connecticut. I do know that there's going to be a whole bunch of people tuning in on Friday to watch Caitlin Clark play Connecticut.
Yeah.
Not Iowa. Her. And that's where you wonder. I mean, it's not nearly to this level, so don't get it twisted. But it's a little tigery. True. Whereas people that would never watch golf wanted to watch Tiger Woods. People that would never watch women's college basketball are watching her. I don't think there's any doubt that that's true.
Yeah, it's a
she has caught the national attention of sports fans. But once again, to that level being the best level that we've ever seen in the women's game, but we don't have to compare it to the men. We just don't. Just it's okay that we're watching one of the greatest women to ever play basketball, and this ride that she is on and her team is gonna shatter women's tournament numbers, and that's good enough. That's all that should be said.
Yeah.
That's good enough.
And we've said this off air. That's what should be compared.
That's it.
Is ratings to each other like from years prior, you know? And to answer your question, like of the interest level, well, we'll know next year. Right? I mean, Clark will.
I mean, I will bet you whatever you want to bet that it goes down.
Yeah, unless because some other superstar emerges, but that's kind of because this is like a wave that she's been riding for 2 to 3 years.
That's exactly right. This isn't just a phenomenon. This has been building and building and building for her.
But it definitely helps the sport with her presence. And I won in sure if what we think would happen is viewership would go down next year, you might have gained some fans because of her.
Sure.
And because of that game last night, you might have gained some fans. You know what? I'm going to continue to watch. So, like, never in my wildest dreams that I thought my wife would ask me, what time do the Rangers play today? That's because they kept winning last year. They gained a fan in my wife. There's a lot of that with women's basketball.
Yep.
There's a lot of that right now because of that game last night, because of Angel Reese, and because of Caitlin Clark. And I think there'll be some carryover from this. Sure.
Yeah, you hope so.
Yeah.
Or they'll go, what time does Caitlin play in the NBA? In the WNBA?
Maybe.
Yeah, I doubt that too. Which is kind of sad for her.
What needs to be on everybody's mind is if that coach from Iowa ever retires, Jenny Baranchik might be at the top of their list.
Yeah, very well. All right, we'll be back. It's Paul Jones Drug Tuesday right here on the Skinny on Sports.
Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations, and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Yeah! Coming at ya!
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Hanging out on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Rodney Skinner and the gang at Paul Jones Drug at 809 North Main. Paul Jones is care you can trust. They are the oldest compounding pharmacy in Elk City. You know what that means? They've got the most experience. You can find free local delivery. You can drive through and pick up your stuff. Test on the curbside, get vaccinated on curbside. Also, blister packs, which is their long-term care unit packaging. Just give them a visit. 809 North Main, 225-2121 is their phone number. Rodney and the gang at Paul Jones Drug is care you can trust. All right, so talk a little bit about who made the Final Four yesterday or how they made the Final Four yesterday on the men's side. Now, let's look into – I mean, this is nuts. Like, how rare some of these teams being there is opposed to the other one. So Connecticut, this is their seventh Final Four since 1999. You know how many games they've lost in the Final Four in their history or since 1999?
I heard this somewhere. I think one.
I think it's zero, isn't it?
Is it zero?
Have they ever lost? I was going off memory.
I think there is one in there. I'm not 100% sure.
I was thinking they had six titles, which would mean they never lost. Two, three, four. Yep, they did once. They've got five titles. 99, 2004, 2011, 2014, 2023. All right, so they're whatever in one. Then you've got Alabama, who's never been. Purdue, who hasn't been since 1980. And North Carolina State, who hasn't been since 1983. Does that, in your mind, does that even matter? I realize UConn's a defending champ, so they do have
a little experience there.
Little experience there, for sure. But how much do you think that really matters? 2009 is when they got when they lost. So that'd have been North Carolina.
I think after all the pomp and circumstances, and after maybe the first 5 minutes of the game, it doesn't. I think what matters is X's and O's and how they match up against each other. Who's hitting their shots? Who's playing defense? Who's rebounding? That's what I think really matters. Because did it matter when OU made their last Final Four when previously in the same season they beat Villanova, like in a game in Hawaii?
No.
It did not matter. It mattered who came out to play.
Yeah, I think what matters more for UConn is they're better than everybody else.
That's what matters.
No matter if they were the champion last year or not. It is interesting. This is the first time that the defending champion has made the Final Four since Florida did it back in 2007. And, oh, by the way, that Florida team is the last one to repeat, which UConn has a chance to do. Do we fully appreciate what Connecticut has been able to accomplish in basketball?
See, I heard this conversation yesterday on the drive home, and then someone said, well, how come they're not – I think it was Jim who said, why, when we always talk about blue bloods in basketball, UConn's not in that conversation. I've always kind of had them in that conversation. Have you? And when we say blue,
it's hard not to, but probably not, though. We named Kentucky, Kansas, North Carolina, and Duke, right?
Yeah. They're very deserving. I mean, because they're doing it with they have done it with multiple coaches.
Three now.
Yeah.
You know, they are the perfect replica of the same idea that happened in college football. Multiple coaches, multiple titles over a similar similar span, and yet probably don't get the credit they deserve as far as blue blood status. You know what I'm talking about? The U.
Oh, yeah.
They're very, 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 very similar to Miami football. Kind of burst on the scene, won titles, different coaches, 20-ish years worth of success. But they also have giant dips down, too. You know, like just like Miami. They've been good, and when they're good, they win it. And when they're not, they're not. And Miami doesn't get the credit as a blue blood, even though they've got five titles with three different coaches in, what, 18 or 19 years, from 83 to 2001. And so that's they remind me of Miami in that regard. When we start talking about blue bloods, no one's going to say Miami, even though Miami had as much success and is, gosh, ahead of a bunch of schools that you would consider to be blue bloods, maybe at least in the conversation as far as national titles go. They got more than Michigan. They got more than Georgia. They got more than same as Texas, or one more than Texas. I mean, you know. You got to go to USC, Ohio State, OU, Alabama, Notre Dame before you get, you know what I mean? That's where Miami is just behind. And UConn is a lot that same way when it comes to basketball. I don't say it. Because if you ask me, I just said, if you ask me the Blue Buds in college basketball, I'd say four. But they probably deserve to be there as well for what they've done. But I don't, yeah, and I don't think they get the appreciation that they probably deserve, just like Miami doesn't didn't in football. What do you make of Edie? You know, I heard a lot of talk yesterday, callers and Jim, and you know, that can't stand watching him play because of how it feels protected. You know, that guy shot 22 free throws and got called for one foul. How is that even possible? You know what I mean? But it happens game after game after game. And I do think a lot of the reason why the other team doesn't get to shoot many free throws is because they won't take it at Edie because they know they're going to get it blocked. Yeah.
He reminds me of Emeka Okafor at times, how frustrating it was to watch him and how it felt like he was, quote-unquote, protected. But because of his size, it was almost they almost forced to blow the whistle and, you know, absorbing a lot of contact. And like, well, if anyone – that's a foul. So, but that's what he kind of reminds me of. But I've been very vocal about Edie, how I like him.
He is really interesting because a lot of times the biggest guy on the floor gets fouls just because they're the biggest guy on the floor. Mm-hmm. It feels like he doesn't. He's the he's like exactly the opposite.
Yeah, that's
like, just because he's the biggest guy, we don't need to call that foul on him. I mean, to shoot 22 free throws when the other team shoots 11 is absurd. But if you watch the game, I don't know, that maybe a time or two somebody drove in for Tennessee and he thought, they probably got fouled. But it wasn't egregious. I mean, they were fouling him.
Yeah.
Flat out fouling him.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe he creates some of that contact because he's so big and long and he stretches his arms out. And, you know, maybe he does create more than we let on. But I don't know. I'm not going to make him out to be the giant villain of the tournament just because he gets to shoot a bunch of free throws.
I don't have a problem with it. He's found... He's a guy, and I actually applaud players that find a way to score or get to the free throw line. You know, he's figured it out. Like, he's like, these guys are going to call it. I'm going to continue to play it this way.
And I have a little bit of a hard time.
So it's not so much, it's not, why should he get the bad, you know, I'm not saying get the pitchforks out and go after the refs, but it's the refs, they chose to call it that way. In a certain game, or maybe in this on Sunday, that's what the way that people saw it.
And maybe he kind of creates it because of his style.
Maybe he's smart. I mean, maybe he's just smart. Like, I know they're going to call this. They're going to have to call it.
Which game are you looking forward to the most?
I'm kind of intrigued about Alabama and UConn. I know UConn looks so good, but Bama being there and their first time, I'm a little intrigued by that. I think it stops for NC State is what I'm saying. So that, and I think Purdue is obviously because I picked them, I think they're going to win it, but, or win that game. But I'm interested in Bama in UConn. Is Bama riding this wave into the Final Four for the first time? And they're going to show something to UConn that they've yet to see in this tournament. So, I'm that one right there. I'm a little. That's the more intriguing one, over the other one.
The network agree with you. That's why it's the second game.
Yeah. Well, I think too, because I think a lot more. Like I said, Purdue and NC State, people are going to see that. They're going to see the seeding and go, that's it. But UConn being the best team, we feel like a lot of eyeballs going to watch. Watch the defending champs.
I mean, DJ Mearns, cool. He's got no chance against Edie, right? Or can he get inside of him and bang him around and create some fouls?
That is intriguing.
I'm just afraid Edie's going to get him in foul trouble the first three times up the floor, and he's going to be sitting down.
Yeah.
I think it's Bama. Yeah, I think it's Bama, Connecticut, no doubt about it. Can Bama string together some magical night from behind the arc. They have the capabilities and really force Connecticut to have to play a close game. They haven't had to in this tournament for 2 years now. It's just been beatdowns. Can somebody give them a game? I think that's the most intriguing thing about the whole weekend, is can somebody finally give Alabama a game, or UConn a game, and could it be Alabama? Or do we have to wait for next Monday night and see if it's Purdue? I can tell you what you don't have to wait for, Jared. $5 chicken fry at Boomtown Grill. Today is Tuesday, and the Tuesday special is $5 chicken fried steak, including one side. So, of course, if it was me, it would be chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes, and gravy for $5 at the Boomtown Grill. It is the Tuesday special. Of course, happy hour every day, 2 to 6. It's Monday through Friday, every day of the week, I should say. Full-service bar, 12 big-screen TVs. Be the perfect place to go Friday, watch the women. Saturday, watch the men. Sunday, watch the women's final. Monday, the men's final. And then all of a sudden, voila, there we are. Thursday afternoon, go down and watch the first round of the Masters. Boomtown Grill is your March Madness headquarters. 2103 South Main right here in Elk City. Boomtown opens 7 days a week. 11 to 10 Sunday through Thursday. 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. When we come back, a little bit of spring football. College football is getting going here in the spring. State of Oklahoma. Talk a little bit about that as we close down a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday right here on The Skinny on Sports.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medication safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back, Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal, hanging out on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Paul Jones Drug is care you can trust right here in the Elk City area. Also, man, I hope I've been trying and trying for the last couple of weeks to get everybody to realize it's spring. What's spring mean? Grass growing. What helps grass? Fertilizer. What helps fertilizer? Water. Rain. Last night, bam, there was some of it. To help soak in all your chemicals, your insecticides, your fertilizers from our friends at Superior Lawns. Superior Lawns have the granular application programs, insecticides to discourage your grubs and other insects, or applications of fertilizer to add some zing to your yard. If you want to either compete for yard of the week, yard of the month, yard of the year, or just up your turf game, Scott Kelly can put you on the right track with a program to fit your needs. 580-799-5670. That is Superior Lawns right here in Western Oklahoma. All right, Jared, so we've got a little college spring football going on here in the state of Oklahoma. And, man, if you start to look at the odds to just win conference titles for both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, they are way lower. Wait, the odds are high, or the odds are however you want to say that. Less chance, according to the odds, that Oklahoma and Oklahoma State will be able to win their respective conference, which, of course, coming up this year, will not be the same one for the first time in a while. Got any idea what Oklahoma's odds of winning?
I'm not very good.
The SEC are?
No idea.
Plus 4,000, which would make them the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th choice. Any thoughts?
It's hard to imagine that. That's a little low. It is still Oklahoma. It seems a little low. Although I think there will be growing pains in the SEC, but I don't think they're the 9th best team in the SEC.
I don't.
That's a great question on the text line. What eight teams are better?
Okay, so according to the odds, Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Missouri, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. So Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Missouri, and Texas A&M. Now, I will say this. If you look at the schedules of Oklahoma and Texas in their first year of the SEC,
oh yeah,
OU clearly, at least with the way the teams were a year ago, Oklahoma clearly got the worst end of that stick. They've got Ole Miss on the road. They've got LSU on the road. They've got Missouri on the road. They've got Auburn on the road. And then they welcome Alabama. They welcome Tennessee. And they also welcome South Carolina. So of the teams ahead of them in the odds, they play one, two, three of them on the road. And they play five of the eight overall. Whereas Texas, they get Georgia. They get A&M, Kentucky, South Carolina, Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, which I was able to read those off right in a row because Kentucky, Florida, Arkansas, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt are five of the last six teams, at least in the prognostications for the conference. Here, I'm going to continue to say this until my face is blue. If Missouri can compete for and play in SEC title games, so can Oklahoma. And Missouri did it their first 2 years in the league. So come on. No offense to Mizzou, but give me a break. Now, how long it'll take, it's a great question. But as far as I can't believe some of the things I hear on these airwaves from hosts, from callers. I guess maybe I've got my head in the sand. But like the 7.5 wins is the total in Vegas. What?
I saw one publication.
That means if you go under, non-conference schedules 4-0. It's not very hard. So that means for it to go under, Oklahoma would have to go 3-5 in the SEC. I don't see it. Maybe that's out there.
Yesterday I had one, or I saw one publication give its, you know, early game-by-game prediction. So naturally I go to SEC, go to Oklahoma. They had them at 9-3.
Now, see, that's where.
And I thought, I'm looking, like it was April 1st. I thought, really? But then I thought, well, I can see it. Losses were to Texas.
Probably Ole Miss on the road.
Somebody on the road and LSU.
LSU's on the road. I mean, they've got
– had them beating Alabama. And, you know, what is Alabama now without Saban? And there's been a lot of changeover there. And there'd be a lot of season to figure that out between now and then. That's towards the end of the year. I don't know, but you kind of alluded to this in the opener. It's hard to me to take any stock into any of that because of the portal age. Yeah, we don't even know what team we're going to have come September.
Yeah, who knows what happens here in a couple of weeks. Now, even more egregious to me is where Oklahoma State is when it comes to a lot of these with the win totals and the odds to win conferences. Oklahoma State's win total is also 7.5 in the newly revised Big 12. Oklahoma State, I think, brings back the fourth most production in the country off of last year's team who played for a Big 12 championship. And they are the seventh best team, according to the odds, in the Big 12. Who's above them? Kansas State? Okay, maybe. I can see, you know what I mean? Okay. Utah? Okay. Utah's been the king of the Pac-12 until last year. Then you got Texas Tech. What? Kansas? I mean, we all think Kansas might be good. Have they been consistently good? No. UCF, and Arizona, all ahead of Oklahoma State. And if we saw anything last year from just the Big 12, and maybe this works in OU and Texas's against them going to the SEC, but what did we notice right off the bat last year in the Big 12 conference? The new ones couldn't beat the old ones almost at all for weeks and weeks. It took forever for one of the new ones to beat one of the old ones. And so I think just to act like, you know, Arizona, Utah are just going to come in here and kind of rule the roost, I think is a little bit – I'm telling you right now, Oklahoma State, 7.5 wins, I think that is ludicrous. I mean, if they go 9-3, that's probably not the greatest year.
Yeah, I'd always – if in every year, right, we've seen this – this is a down year for OSU. Gundy has his work cut out for him. The seed's going to get hot. Always take the over.
Well, and that's what's crazy about this. This shouldn't be one of the.
It shouldn't.
This should be the boy. Oklahoma State played for the title last year. Look what they brought back. Holy cow! But it's not. And that's another reason.
Texas leaving, they are basically the big defending Big 12 champs.
I mean, one could make that point. I'll be shocked if Oklahoma State doesn't win 8 games at least. And I mean, I think that from what we've seen from Gundy in the past, with Oklahoma and Texas leaving, they are poised as much as anybody in the conference to be able to try to take that first step into kind of being the bully on the block with what they've got coming back. And the program that he's built up there, I personally think that both state schools are being undervalued tremendously with what the ability that they have back on their teams this season. But like you said, we won't know that for sure until after the April 15th portal is over, because we just don't have any idea.
We don't know.
I mean, I'm already seeing like different rumors that. The running back that went from Ole Miss to Ohio State, Judkins, that he may come back to Ole Miss. I mean, we've already seen Caden Proctor, what happened there, going from Alabama to Iowa, back to Alabama. We'll make some early predictions as soon as we see the portal over. Does that make sense? I mean, portal April 15th. I realize it was April Fool's, and I'm sure it was just a joke from a Sooner fan yesterday. But on X, I did see Ollie Gordon thinking about that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's no truth to it. I'm just sure of it. But what happens around the country, even around the Big 12 or around the SEC, if something like that does occur that kind of swings the pendulum a little bit, I still think we have to wait until that portal closes for good on the 2024, leading into the 2024 season, before we can get an absolutely true idea of exactly what these teams are going to have and who they're going to have as we get closer to then, obviously, the summer workouts, and then we'll get to fall ball ahead of the season next year.
Yeah. But
just looking at those numbers, I don't understand it. And maybe they know something we don't with regards to portal, but I don't think that has anything to do with it.
I think a lot of it is.
A lot of underappreciation.
Yeah, for OU anyways, the underappreciated or the outside perception, of what they've seen without looking inside to the program of what's going on. Dylan Gabriel leaving, Lebby leaving, so there's question marks at quarterback. Well, we know they got a highly recruited guy that has a incredibly high stock, we think.
Well,
and then the offensive coordinator, how that's going to work out, what's the offense going to look like. And then the defense, you know, there's been some highly recruited dudes, David Stone, one of them, coming in. So I think that's why we feel like they're undervalued, because we know about the program and we know what's going on over there because of our fandom and because of how we're plugged in and seeing and hearing the spring reports and all that stuff. But outside, it's like, well, they lost this Dylan Gabriel guy who went to Oregon, and they lost their offensive coordinator who's over at Mississippi State. And they're moving into a new conference. There's going to be growing pains. Let's set it at, 7.5.
Well, if somebody wants to say they're going to have a struggle on the offensive line, that means they're actually paying attention.
Yeah, there's that too.
Seeing that analysis, I'll go, oh yeah, well that could certainly be true. But just firing out the defense hasn't been any good. Well, everybody's back. And then, you know, Gabriel, are we sure that we aren't going to see an upgrade at quarterback? Talent-wise, I think we are. Now, whether or not he can put it together like Gabriel, that's totally remains to be seen. And I can see how that would but just firing that lazy take out there without also mentioning, you know, if somebody says offensive line is going to be the weak link of Oklahoma, I'll probably keep reading what they have to say. If that doesn't even get mentioned in the first two sentences about this team coming up for OU, then it's not even worth the time to read it because they don't have any idea what they're talking about. Because that is clearly the glaring weakness.
But the number one lazy take is, oh, they're moving to a new conference. Mm-hmm. And I think that is lazy.
We'll see what that matters. We'll see exactly how much that matters. We won't know till the fall. Until we see it, you know. We just won't know. But, I mean, offensive line has got to be a huge concern.
Yep.
And then recruiting, you know, recruiting guys up front. I think the defensive line has already started to get there. Offensive line, we shall see. And for OSU, they're going to be good. Everybody have a great Tuesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered around.